You're listening to Stand Out with Ian O'Connell, Wednesday evenings from 8 p.m. here on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome to the show tonight. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. And I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Stand Out with myself, Ian O'Connell, is Brendan Maher. Brendan is a former Tipperary intercounty hurler. Maher enjoyed a 13-season-long career with the intercounty team, winning 3 All-Stars, and he was a Hurler of the Year nominee in 2010. Maher won 3 All-Ireland medals and 5 Munster titles before hanging up his boots in 2021 after a fantastic career in the blue and yellow jersey. I'm really looking forward to my chat with Brendan tonight and having a chat, I suppose, about his own career and what it takes to perform at the highest level and all coming up through the ranks, and I suppose talk about as well playing with his club. That's a massive thing for the GA. You start your career with the club before, if you're lucky enough to break into the intercounty team, and I suppose when you retire from that, you kind of go back and play with your club again. A lot of people do. So I'm going to chat to him and ask him how important club hurling is for the roots and I suppose the foundation for your career to perform at the highest level in the Tipperary jersey. So I'll be keeping you company up until 9 p.m. tonight, so sit back and enjoy the show. Brendan, I'm delighted to have you on the show today for a chat. How's life with you?
Oh, good, Ian. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to chat with you. I've been admiring your work from a distance, I suppose, over the last number of years. So delighted when you contacted me to come on, and happy to chat to you.
Brilliant stuff. I suppose we're in the thick of the hurling. Are you still as gluted as always watching the games?
I am. I'm still heavily involved, I suppose, in a coaching capacity with Offaly. I've been with them now. This is my 4th season. So thankfully, we're still going and managed to finish 3rd in Leinster. So we're awaiting the losers in the Munster final. And we'll be playing either Limerick or Cork in an All-Ireland quarterfinal. So it's brilliant. It's a great game to be looking forward to. There's a great group in Offaly, and their first time reaching an All-Ireland quarterfinal since 2003. So it's been a long time coming. So we're doing our best to make sure we prepare the boys now as best as we can so that they can put in a good performance on the 20th of June.
Absolutely. I suppose I'd like to ask my guests at the start about, I suppose, just a bit about growing up. Hurling was always kind of involved in your life from a young age. What was it like, I suppose, growing up in Tipperary? Did you have any other kind of interest in sports when you were younger?
Listen, where I'm from, a place called Burrisley in North Tipperary, hurling is the first thing that's spoken about on a Monday morning and the last thing on a Friday evening before the weekend in advance of a match. We live and breathe it, to be honest. It's like any, I suppose, kind of small rural parish. You know, the GA is kind of the epicentre, I suppose. The hurling field, as we would, or the park, as we would call it, is where everyone meets day to day. And so I suppose I was the youngest of 4 boys, Ian, so there was a bit of a gap between myself and the next lad. So I was the admitted mistake that came along 7 years after the first 3 were close in age. So you can imagine growing up in a house then where your older brothers are playing hurling and you're watching them. So from the age of whatever I was, as soon as I was able to pick up a hurley, that was all I wanted to do. There was absolutely other things. We were very lucky in Bursley. We're very strongly involved in score and FLA. So it would have been a lot of music, a lot of set dancing. So it was kind of a great upbringing. It was your typical small kind of rural community feel, and still has that, thank God. I'm still living there. I married a Kerry woman. So she's from Listowel, but I managed to convince her to come up to Bursley. So we're still living just outside the village there. And it's, you know, there's a great community there. Everyone looks out for each other and helps each other, and the GA is a big part of that.
And I suppose with any county player later in your career, everything starts with the club. And even, I suppose, when you retire, then people, they go back playing club hurling. What does club hurling offer that maybe county hurling doesn't, because it's the foundation really of your career, isn't it?
It is. I think it's what it definitely molded me into the type of player that I became, the great coaches that I worked with in the club, and the guidance that I got from family, from my older brothers, from my mother and father, who were always very supportive. And then also your friends, I think, have a huge impact on the type of player you want to become, because you're with them every day in school and down in the field and training. And obviously we were lucky enough in Borussia that we had people to look up to. I suppose for me it was my cousin Philip would have been playing with Tipperary when I was young growing up. My brother Martin would have played a bit as well with senior with Tip, and my other brothers Declan and Sean played minor and under 21. So I had it very close, like that influence of this is what I want to become. And I suppose it does give you that bit of belief that you can do it then as well, when you see family members and people that live close to you that you see every day doing it. It just increased that belief. So the club then, when you get into county mode and you start doing what you do for Tipperary or for Kerry or for any county, you go into a certain kind of a bubble, because it's such a high pressured environment and the stakes are so high and the public nature of it. You just want to do your best and you want to put your best foot forward. And a lot of that is because you want to do your family and friends proud. You want to represent your club, your community, your friends and family. That's kind of what you're playing for. There's the competitive side of wanting to win, obviously, but I, for me, there was a huge purpose in what I was doing, in that I was representing my family first and foremost, but then my friends and the community and the wider parish of Borrisley and Tipperary, obviously. So what do you get then from the club that you can't get from the county? We were lucky enough to go on a fantastic run in 2019 into 2020, where we managed to reach the Club All-Ireland, which was completely out. It came out of nowhere, Ian. Like, it was,
Really?
we hadn't won a county final since 1987. We had
Go
only
away.
been in one in 2017 and got well beaten in it. So for this to happen, to win the county final in 2019 was huge after such a long kind of barren spell. And it kind of just snowballed from that then, where we just started winning games. And when you get a bit of momentum, especially in that club championship, it can count for a lot. And we just got a bit of a run going, beat some great teams along the way. Glen Rovers from Cork, beat Ballygunner, who obviously went on to become one of the best club sides
Yeah.
ever, in a Munster final, and beat St Thomas's in from Galway in a semi-final. And before we knew it, we were heading to Croke Park for an All-Ireland. And what that did, I think, for the club, I don't think I'll ever experience anything like those few months ever again. I hope I do, but I suppose as a player, I'm not going to experience that. But
You had the momentum, like you said.
it was unbelievable, and just every day it lifted the spirits of people around the parish. Like, it was amazing to see what it did and how it brought people together. And we were unfortunate to just fall short of a great Ballyhale team, beat us by a few points in January of 2020, just before COVID hit. So we were lucky to get the
Derek
crowd up, you
Kilkenny, are
know,
they?
the Derek Kilkenny, so TJ
It's
Reid,
TJ Reid's team,
Kennelly's.
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So fantastic team themselves, and Ballygunner and St Thomas's have been the standard bearers, I suppose. So for us to beat two out of those three in that year and come close in the final against Ballyhale, it was something that you'd be hugely proud of, considering, where we had come from, and the lack of experience, I suppose, that we had in the group, just to go from winning your first county final to then suddenly find yourself in Croke Park on Ireland final day. It was just that was it was a special time. And I don't think it's very hard to compare All Ireland final with Tipperary and All Ireland final with Borrisley.
Yeah.
They're so different. And I think it is because of you're literally talking out, and your brother's across from you. He was, Martin was helping out, my brother Declan was helping out, and you have cousins, and it's so intimate, I suppose, that it's just the people you've grown up with, you're getting to share an experience like that with them. It's unbelievable. And I always look on now every year at the club finals, and this year watching Dingle and Gaeltacht winning, and what that did, and my sister-in-law Orla is married to a Dingle man, and just seeing what he went through and going to the matches, and it's just like, it's so special. And it's actually not really about winning the games. It's actually just about bringing people together
Yeah.
and just sharing kind of an experience together. And obviously the winning makes it so positive, but like, even I know everyone in Borrisley would look back at that All-Ireland final that we lost and still think positively about it, which is, a bit strange, but that's the reality of it.
getting there was a win in itself. Like you said, you had
Exactly.
the momentum,
Exactly.
and just to get there alone was a huge achievement. Coming into the senior team with Tipperary, what was that like? Because I suppose everybody's goal when they put on the club jersey is to one day wear the county jersey. And I suppose you came in through the ranks. What was it like getting into the senior team, and I suppose getting the breakthrough there? Was there anyone that, when you joined, that was there that you looked up to for a good while, and you were kind of, I suppose, not in awe, but kind of, did they take you under their wing?
Absolutely. So, to give you a bit of context, I suppose we had a good group of players that won. We won two minors in 2006 and 2007, and we got to an All-Ireland under 21 in 2008. And then there was a kind of a batch of us came in together. Then in the winter, we'll say of 2008, there was five or six of us were called in, and then the following year, another five or six from those teams. So there was the bulk of 10. Kind of from that minor and under 21 team, which would be unusual to get that amount of
A
players,
lot, isn't it?
from minors. So you go through, I suppose the well-known names would have been the likes of Paddy Maher, Noel McGrath, Seamus Callanan, Bonner Maher, then you'd Michael Cahill, Seamus Hennessy, Thomas Dalton, Pat Bourke. There was a load of lads that had come off those minor teams that had went on to play senior. So we probably came in at a time when it wasn't going great, I suppose, from a senior perspective. So we were probably seen as this golden crop of players that are coming, and hopefully they're going to change the narrative for us, I suppose. So at the time we didn't feel it, but there probably was a bit of pressure on us to deliver, to say, like, right, you've won now in minor level, and you're the next kind of great hope that we have. Like, come
Prop
on, off
coming
you go.
through.
We were very lucky, I suppose, in that Liam Sheedy had managed a lot of us at minor level in 2006, so he put his trust in us. He knew us. He knew the type of characters we were. So he took over the seniors in at the start of 2008. So you had one season. Seamus Callanan and Pat Bourke and Thomas Dalton, who had been a year older than us, they were brought in initially, and then the rest of us followed over the next 2 years. So by the time you got to in 2009, a few of us, I'd say four of us, started the All-Ireland against Kilkenny, and that was the real kind of changing of Tipper back competitive again.
Yeah.
So we had a great experience, but obviously a negative experience ultimately by losing in 2009. But that really fueled us, I suppose, to go again. So we managed to get back there again in 2010 and win it, which was the famous kind of five. Kilkenny were going for
They were
five in
going
a
for
row,
five in a row that year, weren't they?
And on that team, like, you had five of us that were still under 21. So it was a huge mix of youth and experience. And that experience then, I suppose, to go back to your original question, Brendan Cummins, Owen Kelly, Lar Corbett, Declan Fanning, all lads that had been hurling for years, literally there since the early 2000s, had gone through the hard years. And I can remember coming in, not long after coming in, we had a team meeting, and I can remember Declan Fanning standing up and basically saying to all of us young lads, "You're winners now. You need to show us how to win. You have that kind of winning mentality, like, and you go and we'll go with you," kind of thing. So he did, and it was obviously intentional that they were just trying to build us up
Yeah.
to say, have the confidence here now to start doing what you did, I suppose, in your minor and under 21 games, and start doing it for us here. So that gave us huge sense of confidence and belief in ourselves. And obviously Liam and the management team were very, very strong in that as well, all about building you up and giving you the confidence to say, like, you can go out and compete with, I mean, you're going out. I remember in, like, marking in 2009, I started wing back. I was 20 years of age, and I was marking Eddie Brennan from
No way.
Kilkenny. And sure, for the years, I remember watching him, like, going down to Nolan Park, watching league games, and Fast Eddie, they used to call him, and like, just thinking, like, I'm now marking this fella, right? And after 20 minutes, he'd about 3 points scored off me. So I was going, this is a bit of a baptism of fire. And I can remember Kilkenny actually switched the two wing forwards. And I'm probably the only person to say I was delighted to see Henry Shefflin coming on to me, because I was struggling so much with Eddie Brennan. But that was like my first All-Ireland, marking those two players. You're just kind of thinking, this is just mad stuff, At the time, you're in survival mode, like kind of thinking, I just need to try and do my bit here. But just when you look back on it, it's just unbelievable to think that you got that experience at such a young age. And we had a great battle, I suppose, over those number of years. Then we three finals in a row against Kilkenny, 9, 10, and 11.
What was it about
Then
Kilkenny, Brendan, do you think?
it was their collective spirit, I think, their collective bond that they had. They had huge natural ability. I think they just had a crop of players similar to what happened with Limerick and those crop of players coming together. When you go through the Kilkenny team back then, and you mention out some of the players there, like Henry Shefflin, Eddie Brennan, JJ Delaney, Jackie Tyrrell, like you can go on and on, and just like you literally had this group of players together that individually were unbelievable, but they had this huge collective
Collective, yeah.
spirit that Brian Cody used to, I think, put a huge emphasis on. And it was just they were willing to do anything for each other to win. And that's not to say that we weren't in that space, but we probably weren't as strong as they were in that space. So like we challenged them probably more than any other team. We got very close. We managed to beat them, but like they had the upper hand on us overall. But I suppose there's something to take for us in that we were so young at the time, that group and the mixture of experience and youth, and to be able to challenge that great team was something I suppose we can look back on fondly. And you'd often be kind of thinking, God, if that team weren't around, we could have won a few more All-Irelands. But it's all ifs and buts, isn't it? Hindsight is great. But I think, yeah, that collective mentality, I think that they had to play for each other and with each other all of the time. When you think of like I'm thinking of one fellow I haven't even mentioned, like, but Tommy Walsh, like, and many All-Stars in a row. But he would literally, if he was asked to go play cornerback or corner forward, that's the collective spirit they had, was like, I'll do whatever I have to do here now for the team to win, which is rare. And I think that's what makes great teams great, is that they can manage to bring individual class and talent together and work together without anyone feeling, no, I should be doing this or I should be doing that. It's like, okay, this is what's best for the team. So there's a huge element of trust, I think, in Brian Cody for that to happen. Listen, it was just, they were a great team, great individuals, but collectively very, very hard to beat.
And there was when you're on the pitch, especially in that couple of years between Tip and Kilkenny, off the pitch there was a great respect, wasn't there?
There was, like, listen, there was a few remarks passed here and there by
Yeah.
players and that now, but it was in my eyes, it was one of the healthiest rivalries
Yeah.
I think we've seen, in sport, in hurling terms anyway. There was never, any sort of malice or any sort of verbals or anything like that would ever happen on the pitch. I used to love playing Kilkenny because it was the one time you knew exactly what you were facing almost. So it was man v man, 15 on 15. There was no huge tactical element at back then. It was starting to creep in, but it was just kind of a, I know if I can go out and win my individual battle here, I've done my bit. And there's an element of that in every game, but contrast that with the likes of what Waterford brought with Derek McGrath taking over and the sweeper system and the different challenges that brought. You just didn't have anything like that to think
It
about
was
when you were playing
different.
Kilkenny. Yeah. So there was
Yeah.
a rawness to it, I think, that I think that's why people liked watching us play against each other. And it was, I think the respect came from that then as well, that it was, you look him in the eyes and you say, right, come on, let's have a go today. And that was 15 on 15 doing that. And just great times, great games to be involved in. And it's what makes the sport, isn't it? It's what makes any sort of, you need rivalries. You look at the current one between Cork and Limerick in hurling
Yeah.
terms, and you see what's brewing between Donegal and Kerry in
Yeah.
football. And like, it's just,
You
people
need
talk
that.
about it. You need it, exactly. It generates the talking points in places like Burnley and around Killarney. I'm sure now all the talk is, will we get another crack
Yeah,
at
100%.
Donegal? So that's what makes the sport. It's a spectator sport at the end of the day. So I think both hurling and football at the moment are in a great place. There is always going to be, can we get hurling being played in more counties and more teams being competitive? And at the moment, there's huge talk over, we played with Offaly, played Kildare in our last game. And unfortunately, now they have made serious progress to come from Christy Ring to Joe McDonagh to Leinster Championship. they're back down in Joe McDonagh now next year. We definitely gained from playing the top teams, and it brought Offaly hurling on, and Kildare now had to go back down. And it's not to be disrespectful to the Joe McDonagh teams, but you cannot beat being exposed to the top teams, because it makes you better. So if there's a way that we can try and bring more teams into that and try and expose them to more higher level games, you know, you'll see more teams like Kildare and the likes of Laois and Westmeath, and, you know, like even Kerry are flying it again this year. I'm in touch with John Griffin quite regularly, and he's doing a fantastic job there. But I used to always enjoy going down playing Kerry in the, whether it was the Water Crystal or whatever it became. Those games were always huge, and they were always a huge occasion for the Kerry boys to get to play tip, or you know what I mean? So that's what we need more of. But overall, I think when you look at the competitions, I think we're in a good place.
Was it 2010 that year? Did you get Young Hurler of the Year?
I did, yeah, I got Young Hurler
of the
Year.
Did that add any bit of pressure? Yeah. Was there pressure after you getting that?
Definitely, definitely. I think we all went through our own little spell, that crop of players, you know, when you think about like Seamus Callanan came on and was on the team in 2008 and 2009, and then struggled to make the team in 2010. Just, you know, like a little dip in the form, but then you just had so much talent there. It was, you know, it was very competitive. And he probably went through a little spell where he struggled, and then he just went to a new level altogether and ended up like nominated for Hurler of the Year, like
Unreal,
4 years in a row or something, you know. So Noel the same had his dips and challenges. Paddy was probably the most consistent of us all. He was a different animal where he just performed over and over again. And Bonner the same. He just, the consistency of him was just unbelievable. And he struggled later on in his career with injuries. So there's always going to be kind of setbacks like that. I definitely struggled in 2012 was probably my most challenging year, where they talk about second year syndrome, but I probably had it just 2 or 3 years in, where maybe started overthinking things. I went mad into the gym. I was like, I need to get bigger and stronger. And, you know, you always have things you're kind of feeling like this is going to get me to the next level. And you learn that you were doing the wrong thing. But I think from then on, from 2013 on, I found a consistency in my game that I'd always talk, when I'm talking to players now and working with players, it's like, it's almost like avoiding going, having those peaks and troughs, to getting your kind of base level from here up to here, so that when you're, you know, when you're playing, you always have this level, and then you can touch off of those great performances every so often. But it's avoiding going down into these 5 out of 10 performances, and a huge part of that is your mindset, like, and the mental side of the game. So I do a huge amount of work on that now with the Offaly players, and I'm a big believer that, you know, 90% of this is in the head, like, and, you know, the rest of the stuff, the physical nature of it and the technical stuff is all there. You know, your body and your mind converse so much. It's how do we get this happening when I'm not feeling right? How can I stay performing, doing the things that I need to do to perform? So 100%. I kind of felt like I started getting a hold of that, and much better at that from kind of 2013 onwards.
Trill, I want to ask you about Tipperary, man that I've great time for, Darren McCarthy. He's obviously a special talent coming through. How important is it to have players like him, not just on the Tipperary team, but on any inter-county teams, you know, obviously in the football, you've the likes of David Clifford down here with us. I know there's a lot of media and spotlight on him, but how important is it to have talents like that coming through for the sport in general?
I think it's great, because, you know, it's back to when you're younger, you look up to players that are on the telly and playing for Kerry or for Tipperary or whatever it might be. And Dara is one of those exciting young players now that the school kids are just mad to replicate. And I saw a great video last year of an under-8 game that was being played, and there was a young fella taking a free, and he literally replicated Dara's free-taking routine from start to finish. And I just thought, like, isn't that great? Like, it's just, that just shows the power of, you know, inter-county hurling and what it does for youngsters. So, Dara is a great talent. And there's lots of talent around the country. You know, when I think of, I'm involved with Offaly there now a number of years, and you're the likes of Adam Screeny and Dan Bourke and Dan Raven and these guys that have come along. For me, it's making sure that we foster and support those young players in the right way. And I suppose that's what I try and do. I try and almost bring, not what I didn't have, that's the very unfair thing to say, that I did have support, but I probably didn't open up enough about what I was struggling with, you know, in my earlier days. And I think it's better, I think, now, where young players will talk more openly, but it's making sure that you have those supports around these great stars, because it's a huge shift to go from Darren McCarthy, who was in school in Nina CBS, and suddenly, before you know it, you're playing in an All-Ireland final. That's a huge shift in Dara's, you know, mindset and how he deals with that. And sometimes that can be forgotten, and you just look at the player. Isn't it great for him? How lucky is he to be able to do what he's doing? But Dara's experiencing something completely different. And I think that's why we need to make sure that we support those players so that they can be their best, which makes it better for the game and better for youngsters to look on and see their idols do what they do. So it's fantastic for the game, but I suppose I can't help but feel, you know, like making sure that we support these players and give them the support that they need to make sure they get the best out of themselves and that they, you know, they deal with the struggles they might have psychologically in different ways and the different nature of becoming a star, I suppose.
No, 100%. I like, it's a whirlwind, like, especially at that age. Like, I see David Clifford down here, he's not on social media, or anything in social media has such a big effect on things now. I suppose when you are that age, like, social media wasn't it wasn't a thing, and like, you know, you'd obviously see the odd headline or on the paper or something, but in one way, are you happy that when you were that age growing up that social media wasn't such a big thing as it is now?
Absolutely. Social media is great. I think it's great for people to connect. It's how we connected. You know, it's, I think it can be such a positive thing, but I suppose with respect to maybe, you know, headlines and maybe keyboard warriors, I suppose, getting their voice where they shouldn't be getting it. And the likes of a young player may be seen. I suppose for us, you got it in newspaper articles or the Sunday game or on radio. You know, that was kind of the extent of it. Whereas now you're literally getting the opinions of thousands and thousands of people, and it can come straight into your inbox. Like, and that's
a profile that has no profile picture.
Exactly. It's just, you know, that connection is probably, it's too open, I think, for that. So the likes of David and what he does and staying off social media, I think he's 100% right, because he's at a level where, you know, he's enjoying playing the game. I think he's such a good advocate for sport in general, and how he handles himself. The pressure he is under is just immense. The attention he gets from opposing forwards. And I saw something recently about his temper, somebody going on about his temper, and I was like, come on, no, give him a break. Like, God, like, you've no idea what it's like to experience. I've no idea to know what it's like to experience what he's experiencing. And I played at the top level, but this is another level again, you know? So again, I know he's getting good support there with people involved in the background, like Cathal Sheridan, I think he was with Tip last year, and Kerry. And I know Tony Griffin has been working there a couple of years back. And do you know, people like that are hugely important, I'm sure, for David. And I'm sure he has other people that he would lean on and use as a support network, I suppose, to talk through things and to try and just make sure that he keeps his head right. His level of stardom is just on a different level altogether, you know, than anything we've ever seen.
It is, like, and I, even myself, I'd know David, but he was only 2 years ahead of me in school, or 2 or 3 years ahead of me, and, you know, even just to see him around the school, and then now you see him, and there's under sixes running up to him after games and everything, it's unreal. 2016, Brendan, was obviously a massive year for you. What was it like that year, I suppose, winning the All-Ireland, wasn't it?
It was both personally and collectively, there was a huge sense of relief that we had gotten the kind of second All-Ireland, because we had come so close, having been there again in 2011. In 2014, we had the famous Hawkeye incident where the game was a draw and we lost the replay. And that year was my first year as captain. So, you know, you talk about managing your emotions and that. Like, I can remember just being inconsolable, crying at the banquet after that 2014 replay, and it was just a complete outburst of emotion that I'd been holding in for,
For
you know,
so
the whole
long,
year
yeah.
trying to achieve something. And 2015, we got beaten by a point in the other in semi-final, so we were so close to getting back to there again, and you kind of felt like, God, is that our chance lost a little bit? We had a change in management then, where Eamonn O'Shea decided to step away in 2015, and I can remember the change was Mick Ryan was a selector, and he literally stepped up to manager, and I think that was a huge there was huge importance in that, because I feel as if we had gone to a fully new management team, it may 2016 may not have worked out the way that it did, because there might have been more changes than were necessary, if that makes sense. So
Does it take a while to adapt a whole new management setup? It does.
it does, it's a different environment,
Yeah.
because you know, you're trying to please a management team that's ultimately players, you know, the management have the power in picking the team, and as a player, all you want to do is be on the team, so you're willing to do whatever is necessary. So yeah, it's a huge change. So I think that transition from 2015 to 2016, we were disgusted, like, to lose Eamonn. He was such a, you know, a passionate man. And 2016, then there was a we got the thing going quite well early in the year, and went unbeaten in championship then the whole way through. Had our setbacks along the way in tough games, but I just remember a huge sense of relief almost in 2016, rather than I think the elation of 2010 or 2019. It was different, you know. And for myself personally, being able to bring the cup back to Boris Lee again, back to your point earlier about,
Massive.
you know, the importance of the club. I can remember coming out from Turles after doing our homecoming in Semba Stadium. We actually went straight out to Boris Lee and did it all in the one night, because this club is only 10 minutes out the road. So I can remember turning. When you come in from Turles, there's a turn, and the kind of the square of the village is kind of there in front of you, and the place was black with people. It was like just thousands of people, and there was three players involved: myself, Dan McCormack, and Paddy Staleton, and the masseur, who's still the Tipperary masseur. He's there 21 years, I think, at this stage. Mick Clancy is a Boris Lee man as well, and I can remember we were all sitting up at the front four seats. And Mick just put his hand across. I remember him putting his hand on my shoulder, and he didn't say anything, but everyone was experiencing the same thing. It was just a huge, again, the emotion of it, and getting to bring the Lee McCarthy Cup back to Boris Lee as a winning captain. Like, it's just a huge honour, and followed in great footsteps of guys before me. So yeah, it was a very emotional kind of celebration, I suppose. They're all emotional, but like for me, it was like a sense of relief, but then just pure pride, like, to be able to kind of bring Lee McCarthy back to Boris Lee. It's a huge honor.
Obviously, doing the your ACL, that was a mat because you're so used to training. I writing an article there. You're five, six times a week, and then you're on the kind of sideline watching the lads train. And it's I think already you started doing a bit of boxing just to keep the cardio up and cycling. Then, what was that like to, I suppose, go from apps full on training to, I suppose, your back, I suppose, just learning how to get the leg going again, mentally and physically.
Well, listen, I think I'm speaking to a man who would definitely be able to talk more about the challenges that it brings. Mine was minuscule in comparison to what you've gone through and how you've dealt with it. So I feel as if I'm not the most experienced person here to be talking about this, but there is a huge mental challenge of, you know, you go from being so active and, you know, training and playing at such a high level to suddenly going, God, I'm facing
Yeah.
however amount of months on the sideline, and I don't know if I'll ever be able to play at the same level again, and all that kind of doubt comes into your head. Absolutely no doubt about that. I suppose I consider myself a quite determined person, and at that stage, I suppose I had said, yeah, I was pretty good in terms of my mental capacity,
Yeah.
and my mindset was very good at the time. I remember passing a comment to Neem Sheedy. Came back in as manager just after I did my ACL, and I said it quite flippantly, like, but he asked me how I was feeling, and you know what way, you know, and I said, well, physically, I said, I'm obviously, you know, not in a good place, but mentally I feel bulletproof.
Yeah.
And that was when I had the ACL done. So that will give you maybe a flavor of the way I was thinking at that time. It was very much like, this is a setback. I'm going to come back better than I was before. And that was my view from the start. So put a plan in place. It's always like, a goal is only a wish without a plan kind of thing. So put a really good plan in place, and was very lucky then to have a great support team around me with physio and doctor and S&C. We had a guy come in, Carbo Carillon. He's probably more famously known now as being Mowgli Bopp's brother from Kneecap. So he was our S&C coach for a number of years with TIP. He came in winter of 2018, and it was just great timing for me because he had come from the Arsenal. He was with the Arsenal women's soccer team for a couple of years before
Boy,
that,
really?
and he had literally rehabbed one of the girls with an ACL. That was one of his last things he did when he moved back to Ireland. So he had the full program that she worked off of, and he was able to present it to me and say, "Look, this is what we were at. This is what I worked on. I'm literally just after finishing a return to play with a girl in Arsenal." So we kind of used that as a blueprint. So he sat down with me. I remember I got surgery in the 20th of July. So I had that initial 3 months of it's the basic stuff. You get your knee back working, flexing, extending. It's, basically get yourself back to jogging.
Bit
So
of
that's kind
range
of the
of
first.
motion and all that.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's kind of fairly straightforward. For me, it's from 1 to 3 on is when you can really like hone in on doing the right stuff and maybe either gaining a bit of time or losing it, depending on if you do the right or wrong thing. So at that 3 month mark, which would have been kind of middle of October, Carver was appointed. So he sat down with me and said, right, first thing he said was, right, when do you want to be back hurling? So of course I was like, I'm going at this as hard as I can. No, I'm going to do this in 6 months. So we made the lofty kind of a thing then of saying, right, let's aim for the 6 month mark to be back playing. Which would have been the 20th of February, I think, was the way it was working out. And we worked back from that then, saying, okay, at the start of February, we need to be doing this, middle of January. So there was a really structured plan that I knew what targets I was going after in terms of like straight line running, cutting, change of direction, non-contact, cutting, change of direction with minimal contact. There's all this kind of, progressive stuff that you go through. And I remember playing my first 15 on 15 in training. I think it was the 13th of February or something like that. So I got in a week early from my initial target, and talked about like being, you think you have everything done, like, but I can remember that training game and feeling like I haven't a clue what I'm at here. Just, going from like, because it was June the previous year was the last time I had played a game. But got back hurling, and I genuinely think it was the mental side of it that I put such a huge focus on rather than the physical recovery. And I worked with a couple of people on it, one being Gary Keegan. I don't know if you've ever come across Gary.
Heard the
He's,
name, yeah.
yeah, so he would have been with the Irish rugby team and worked a lot with the Irish boxers, would have been a performance director in Sport Ireland there with the boxing team, and has previously worked with Dublin Football, Cork Hurlers. He's done a few different gigs, but I remember him kind of explaining to me of how to almost build up the conditioning mentally the same way you're doing it with your leg. So we use analogies like kind of building a wall block by block, and the layers of a cake, and putting on each layer every time. And there's a term in psychology called anchoring. So it's basically like when you achieve something, you either write it down or you really anchor it to actually build it up into your subconscious. So I would have started journaling everything I was doing, and like I'm a kind of a tick the box fella anyway, so that
Yeah.
suited me. So it was very much phone was used each day. I'm doing this, this, and this. So we used to call it a code, a calendar, a daily event. So it was like live by your code, and I was doing 9 sessions a week. That was kind of my week to week kind of rehab stuff, and I just used to remember like ticking off that session is done. And what that does for you, I think, mentally, then is just it just reinforces that confidence to say the work is done. your knee is stronger than ever, and it just gives you confidence then to go out and jump and land and run without thinking about like, oh God, is it strong enough? Is it, you know, you remove
that
bit of
voice in
doubt.
The back of your head, like,
exactly, yeah. So you are replacing that voice. You're challenging that voice, and listen, you never get rid of it. But you are able to manage that voice a little bit better when you do intentionally manage your thoughts as best as you can. So, that's a big part of it for me. I think it's the mindset is everything, in my opinion. I think you know, when you take it, whether it's sport or something you're trying to achieve, the mind is the first thing to give up, you know,
100%.
I think if you can manage your thoughts, manage your emotions and get yourself into a good mindset, then stuff that you mightn't think is possible is absolutely possible.
100%. And I'm going mad into that as well, since my accident kind of the mind, and you know how powerful it really is. Last question before we finish up, Brendan, I suppose you'll have a key eye on the game coming up now, Limerick and Cork. Did you think, I suppose going back to last year's All Ireland, great win for Tip at half time there, did you think they'd be able to turn it around? Obviously it was 6 points, isn't it?
Yeah, but I remember feeling at the time going like, we don't deserve to be 6 points down, because we had hurled well. And I did have this feeling like, oh God, if a few little things can go our way now in the first 10 minutes of the second half, we have a chance here. I absolutely didn't think what was going to happen was going to happen. Like, yeah. I wasn't going like, oh no, we'll get a run in them now. And but I did genuinely kind of feel, I was like, this is like, they're hurling well. And, you know, we had had the shots in the first half, everything, you know, when you look at stats and that kind of stuff, and
they weren't playing bad like in the first half.
No, it wasn't like, and like the goal was a bit of a sucker punch, from Shane Barrett at the time. So like, it was, I think the 6 points were maybe flattering for Cork. I would have seen it more as like, this is a puck of the ball kind of a thing at the moment, you know? So, I didn't see what was coming, in that second half performance. What a performance. It was unbelievable. But unfortunately, and this is the nature of sport, like we're watching on now this year, unfortunately, for the rest of the campaign. So it's a disappointing way for the lads to follow on. But I know from being through it, like, it, you know, people will come up with their own solutions or reasons why, this is why they didn't perform and this is why they didn't do that. And like, some of the stuff is thrown out, it's crazy. Like, oh, they weren't fit enough and this.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, there's no county team not fit. Do you know what I mean?
They're going to have them people though.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit kind of like lazy analysis. It's just the easiest thing that you can put your hands on that would maybe make sense. They'll hang on to that then. So like, it's such fine margins. I think, listen, they'll be back and they'll get the thing going again. And but I do remember any time I was talking to people or doing anything media wise, I remember I had doing a preview, like, and I was like, look, I would take hand and all if you now to get out of Munster, because it's just so competitive and it's such, like, the margins are so fine. And like, you go through Tip's year, like, it was just a small little thing changed it, like a wind down a Waterford puts you into a different place going into play Clare. And you know, it's top level sporting is just, it's unforgiving. So
especially Munster hurling in the last couple of years.
Exactly. And if you're 1% off in any kind of aspect, you'll pay the price. So that's why you have to admire, you know, you'd have to admire the teams that are consistently there. You know, Limerick have been probably the most recent great team that we've all admired. And you go back through Kilkenny, and it's just like, it to stay competing at that level year on year is just so hard. So you'd have to just admire, I suppose, any team that does it.
Brendan, you're a gent, and I appreciate you coming on today now for a chat, and all the best with whatever you've in the future, awfully, and in your own personal life. So thanks so much for coming on.
Absolutely, my pleasure, Ian. Thanks for having me on.
Now, unfortunately, that's all we've time tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I really appreciate you tuning in as always. A massive thanks to Brendan Maher for coming on tonight and sharing his story and a chat about his career in the blue and yellow Tipperary jersey. And if you want to get in contact with me before next week's show, You can get in contact with me through my Instagram, enoconnell321. Or as always, you can send me an email to my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. Stay tuned in here to Radio Kerry because Brian Priestley is up next with That's Jazz. I'll be back at the same time next week from 8 to 9 p.m. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself.
You're listening to Standout with Ian O'Connell, Wednesday evenings from 8 p.m. here on Radio Kerry.